Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, July 9th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, updates for the Bridge, Orleans, and Marble fires, objecting to deportation flights, Eureka drops Avelo Airlines, and judge vacates his earlier order releasing sexually violent predator. So stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming up. On July 8th, around 7:23 p.m., deputies from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office responded to a report of a shooting in the 900 block of Glendale Drive, Glendale. Here is what was reported in their press release. Upon arrival, deputies located a 37-year-old male victim suffering from a life-threatening gunshot wound. Deputies and responding medical personnel performed life-saving measures. However, the victim succumbed to his injuries and was pronounced deceased while en route to the local hospital. The identity of the deceased is being withheld at this time. Detectives from the HCSO Major Crimes Division responded to the scene and are actively investigating the incident. Preliminary findings suggest that the shooting stemmed from a dispute over a civil matter involving two individuals and is believed to be an isolated incident. Following an extensive search of the area, no suspects were located, and HCSO is actively following up on leads. The HCSO is continuing its investigation and will release additional information regarding the suspects and any associated vehicles as it becomes available. Anyone with information about the case or related criminal activity is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251 or the Sheriff's Office Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. KMUD News spoke with Fire Captain Specialist for CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit, Jordan Kilbury, for an update on the bridge fire from approximately 3:30 p.m. today.
Bridge fire is still at 403 acres, and it's now 60% contained. All evacuation warnings have been lifted in that area, and crews continue to reinforce containment lines, mopping up interior hotspots on both vegetation fires on opposite sides of the Little River. Equipment is currently being demobilized from the incident.
Air quality monitors and the current air quality index for communities should be viewed at the EPA's Air Now Fire and Smoke Map at fire.airnow.gov. U.S. Forest Service Air Resource Advisors may have deployed on a fire and may issue smoke outlooks, which can be found at outlooks.wildlandfiresmoke.net-outlook. KMUD News will continue to provide updates as the story develops. For information on fire updates, visit kmud.org under the Fire Resources tab. KMUD's Jordan Pangelinan has today's updates regarding the bridge fire and both Orleans and Marble Complex fires.
The U.S. Forest Service Department of Agriculture brings updates on the Orleans Complex incident. The Orleans Complex includes the Butler and Red Fire in the Six Rivers National Forest. KMUD News spoke to Deanna Seil, the PIO for the Six Rivers National Forest.
So we are reporting that it's 2,126 acres. That will be updated tonight, and we expect to see some growth, but our current number is 2,126.
There is still a 0% containment with personnel at 313. The North Coast Interagency Incident Management Team assumed command on the Red Fire this morning at 7 a.m., Information on both fires will be available under the Orleans Complex. A complex incident management team has been ordered and is expected to assume command by Saturday. The Butler Fire had some activity last night, flicking up the canyon on Hamel Creek. The fire is now at the Nordheimer Creek drainage. Overnight, firefighters patrolled the fire line to monitor fire behavior and assess special values at risk. Today, fire crews will continue to scout pre-existing control lines from the 2024 Bowie's Fire. They will begin assessment and line preparation along the 10N04 to Nordheimer Creek Road. Structure groups will continue structure protection. From the campground, crews are working on reopening handlines to the Orleans Mountain Trail. Crews will work on brushing and line preparation operations along the Salmon River Road and Nordheimer Creek. Air resources are being utilized to tame critical hotspots as well as assist with other efforts on the Red Fire. An unmanned aerial system may be used for strategic firing operations as early as this evening. The Red Fire, as of last night, is estimated to approximately be 104 acres. It is burning in heavy timber and dense vegetation in the Siskiyou Wilderness area. Smoke jumpers and crew are making good progress on the fire, using direct and full suppression tactics to minimize the footprint of this fire. There are no structures threatened or evacuations. The fire is located approximately 1.5 miles north of Nicowitz Peak, 17 miles northeast of Orleans, and 15 miles southeast of the Klamath. Residents should prepare for potential delays and road closures along the Salmon River Road between Butler Flat and Nordheimer Campground. Nordheimer and Oak Bottom Campgrounds are both closed. Here are the updated evacuation warning and order zones.
There are evacuation orders in place. They were just changed as of 4 p.m. So evacuation order was issued for CIS 1703 and the CIS 1803A. And I think just I'll have to double check on whether or not the CIS 1704 was also issued. But community members can stay apprised by going to Genesis Protect and typing in their address or to the community that they are concerned about.
Today, the fire may continue to spread into Butler, Grant, and Hummel Creeks. The fire may also make short runs when it aligns with the slope as it wraps around Butler Mountain. Grant Creek and the draw on the north side of Butler Mountain will see significant downhill winds. Here is how to help firefighters continue their work.
As always, we like to give a fire safety and prevention message. So, we really kindly ask community members and members of the to help us out by making sure your equipment and vehicles and tires are in good condition before going on trips. That can greatly help reduce human-caused starts, and we really appreciate it.
For information on your evacuation zone or fire prevention, visit KMUD.org under the Fire Resources tab. Visit protect.genesis.com for more information on your evacuation zone. That is protect.genasys.com. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan. The U.S. Forest Service Department of Agriculture brings updates on the Marble Complex incident. The Marble Complex is a combination of the Jacket and Summit Fire in the Klamath National Forest. KMUD News spoke to Andrew Freeborn, the PIO for the California Complex Interagency Management Team, Team 9.
The Marble Complex is comprised of two fires, the Summit Fire and the Jacket Fire. Currently, the two fires combined are totaling 515 acres, and combined, that represents there is 5% containment achieved when looking at the two fires accumulatively. The Jacket Fire is 46 acres in size, and the Summit Fire is 465 acres in size. Currently, there are 420 individuals that are assigned to the Marble Complex. The Marble Complex personnel are individuals that can be supporting the logistics of the fire all the way to the actual fire personnel that are actually fighting the fire on the fire line. To give you an idea of the current situation that we have, and that is that we've had multiple days of active suppression work by firefighters on the Marble Complex. They're making good progress, even though they're facing challenging conditions. The area that these fires are located in is very steep. It's very remote. It has a lot of trees that are standing but that are dead, so there's a definite hazard there. There is still thick vegetation, and so the attention of the firefighters is split somewhat on the two fires. On the Jacket Fire, it's the work now of finalizing containment. It is not spread in many days, and they have begun work on suppression repairs as well on that fire. Over on the Summit Fire, it's grown to 465 acres, and it continues to be a challenge because of the terrain again. They're making very good progress, especially on the northern side of the fire. They now have hand line that reaches across the whole north end of the fire. So on the east side near the Pacific Coast Trail, and it goes all the way across the north side down to the far west side of the fire. The work continues to strengthen that hand line that's across the north end of the Summit fire so that we can continue to increase the containment across that top edge. Across the southern edge of the Summit fire, fire crews are having to pull away a little ways back from the direct line because of the safety challenges that are posed by the terrain, as well as so many trees that have burnt from previous fires and are dead, and they're a hazard to work around. So the firefighters continue to make good progress on both fires.
Here are some concerns Freeborn has for residents nearby and gives tips on how to be prepared and stay aware.
The most significant one that is impacting individuals right now is on the Pacific Crest Trail. There's a section of that that is impassable because of the fire. Individuals that are hiking that trail are having to detour and work around it because the fire actually went up onto the trail in certain areas. Aside from that, we encourage individuals to continue to monitor whatever zones are in warning or order conditions and to adhere to the guidelines as such.
A forest closure is currently in effect due to the Summit fire. Residents and visitors are asked to avoid these areas and remain vigilant of changing fire conditions. For information on your evacuation zone or fire prevention, visit KMUD.org under the Fire Resources tab. Or evacuation zones can be viewable at siskiyoucounty.gov/emergency services. KMUD News will continue to cover this fire as we get more information. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
The Eureka City Council has taken a stance against federal immigration actions by discontinuing use of an airline that provides deportation flights, Daniel Mintz reports.
Vilified for contracting with the federal government on deportation flights, Avelo Airlines has lost the city of Eureka's business. It only amounts to about $2,500 a year, but the city's snub of Avelo was described as meaningful by council members and public speakers when the decision was made at the July 8th Eureka Council meeting. Brought forward by Councilmember Mario Fernandez, directing an end to the city's Avelo travel was described as being in alignment with Eureka's status as a sanctuary city. Avelo is locally valued for its comparatively cheap flights to Burbank from the county's main airport. There's only one local alternative, United Airlines, which city manager Miles Slattery said would be about 30% to 40% more expensive. But council members and those who spoke during a public comment period described use of Avelo as morally bankrupt. The majority of public commenters were from two groups, Humboldt Democratic Socialists of America and Humboldt Democracy Connections. Annie Crickey, a member of the latter group, was one of several speakers who said the country is backsliding away from democracy, and Avelo is assisting it.
We live in a culture of violence and apathy, and our government has just supercharged ICE, given seemingly unlimited power and money to an entity with no rules or accountability, only hatred and destruction as their intent. And the discussion on the table is whether or not this council should vote to stop putting money into this war machine. The council, who has already shown their humanity by declaring Eureka a sanctuary city and a sanctuary county and a sanctuary state. So should you stop using Avelo for city business? Yes. Absolutely. Without a doubt. We cannot, as a community, support any part of the abductions, kidnappings, forced removals, and disappearances. ICE will likely be in our community soon, and we must be a united front from the beginning. No ICE in our skies, no ICE in our community, no ICE in our streets. Tell Avelo and Andrew Levy they will not get our money while they are part of these atrocities. Thank you.
Other members of the group said doing business with Avelo supports a, quote, hatred machine and racist, cruel, and vile policies. And they said Eureka should stop patronizing fascist airlines. Council members were receptive to the calls for morality. Saying he's not one to quote from religious texts, Fernandez nevertheless related a quote from the Bible about not oppressing foreigners. He added that the deportation flights are not moral and the city shouldn't be, quote, complicit or complacent in the denial of due process or other 14th Amendment rights. Councilmember Katie Moulton described use of a velo as morally and economically irresponsible.
The campaign of terror that is being waged against the innocent Latino community with or without their papers in order, the suspension of due process, is not only a stain on the soul of our democracy, it is a crippling injury to our economy that we will feel soon, harming every consumer, every investor, every worker, but hitting working class people, like most of us in Eureka, hitting us the hardest. I agree with the commenter who said that this is the least we could do. I agree. We should not spend any more public money with Avelo Airlines.
Councilmember Renee Contreras-Deloach related the personal significance of ICE actions.
You have people who now have valid green cards. They had valid green cards. And those are being removed. Not because they committed a crime or anything else, but they are being stripped. How does that happen? How is that happening? And it's not lost on me, obviously. My name is Contreras. It doesn't matter how I look. The rest of my family does not look like me. And that's not my name by marriage. It's my name by heritage. And I have the benefit of some protection here. But other members of my family do not. And they have the misfortune of being down in Arizona and closer to the border. So, yeah, you got to take small stands where you can. Maybe it doesn't make a big difference to Avelo if we do, you know, they don't have our $2,000, but we have an opportunity to make a statement and take a stand and say that we want our constitutional standards to continue forward as they have been.
Legal staff had advised the council to make the decision with a consensus process instead of a formal vote to sidestep potential litigation from Avelo and ICE, but Fernandez said he'd be remiss not to call for a vote, and he motioned to do so. Other council members supported that. Mayor Kim Burgell said the decision, quote, may not make a big difference to Avelo, but I think it makes a huge difference to our community. The vote to stop using Avelo was unanimous. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Today, July 9th, Humboldt County District Attorney Stacey Eads announced that Humboldt County Superior Court Judge Caleb Cockrum vacated his December 2023 order that would have conditionally released sexually violent predator Richard Stobaugh into the community. Following a full day of evidence presented by Senior Deputy District Attorney Whitney Tim with the assistance of Chief District Attorney Investigator Kyla Baxley, Humboldt County Superior Court Judge Cockrum ruled that Stobaugh is not an appropriate candidate for conditional release at this time. The presentation of evidence included Stobaugh's possession of child pornography while placed at Coalinga State Hospital. The judge found the District Attorney's Office met its burden of proof, specifically regarding Stobaugh's possession of child pornography while in state custody. Cockrum cited three primary reasons for denying release: the nature and severity of the crimes, Stobaugh's mental illness, and the potential safety risk to the community. Stobaugh's next scheduled hearing that was slated for July 14, 2025 has been canceled, and he will remain at Coalinga State Hospital. By state law, Stobaugh may petition the court for release on an annual basis. KMUD News reached out to the Humboldt County District Attorney's Office for comment, but was not ready before news time. KMUD will continue to provide updates as the story develops. In state news, Governor Newsom unveils blueprint for rebuilding on 6-month anniversary of LA firestorms, KPFA's David Hummel reports.
6 months after the Eaton and Palisades fires ravaged Los Angeles communities, LA is well on the road to recovery. The devastating fires broke out January 7th, forcing tens of thousands to flee. By the time it was contained, nearly 38,000 acres had burned, and more than 2,000 buildings were damaged. Governor Gavin Newsom recalls the more than 24 lives lost in the fire before discussing the recovery.
It's how we respond to what happens to us. And it's that response that I wanted to just briefly highlight here today. As was noted, the bishop, one of the beneficiaries of some debris removal, this has been the fastest fire recovery in terms of debris removal in modern history.
Newsom highlighted some accomplishments as he unveiled the blueprint for reconstruction. He announced Monday that the cleanup process of over 10,000 recorded parcels is nearly complete, and one-third of all residential reconstruction permits have been approved. $3 billion in funding had been secured from the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Small Business Association. Newsom's order will fast-track the rebuilding of homes and schools by suspending local permitting laws and building codes. He hopes that the shift towards rebuilding efforts can help local officials with time-sensitive community reconstruction needs. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass on Sunday detailed the recovery effort. In a written release, she said more than 1 million tons of debris had been removed and properties had been cleared for reconstruction months ahead of expectations. Mayor Karen Bass was expected to speak at the event, but was unable to due to an emerging event. Deputy Mayor Freeman gave remarks in her place.
In those early days in January, many wondered how we could possibly come back. But we stand here today after 6 months of resilience, 6 months of neighbors supporting neighbors, 6 months of government, philanthropy, the private sector, community organizations, neighborhood councils, chambers of commerce, and the countless members of the community that have come together to care and nurture one another.
Democratic Senator Alex Padilla also spoke, recalling the importance of celebrating the work of immigrant communities in LA. He said the fight to rebuild Los Angeles is interconnected with defending communities against Trump's mass deportation campaign.
And this is also the time, as California has done for so long, to respect and honor the contributions of so many immigrants in our communities, because many of them work in construction. They're the construction workers that we need to continue the rebuilding process for our communities. This is absolutely not the time to threaten or terrorize construction workers and their families in our community.
Senator Padilla and local officials say further federal support is necessary to keep up the progress of rebuilding. Reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA News, I'm David Hummel.
In national news, Texas Governor Abbott says 109 dead and 161 missing, dismisses talk of blame as the word choice of losers. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott painted a grim picture of the devastating Texas floods, with 109 fatalities, 161 people missing. He says in Kendall County alone, more people died in the floods than died in Hurricane Harvey.
The job right now, the primary job right now, continues to be locating everybody who was affected by this flood.
Abbott was joined at the briefing by other state officials. Chief Nim Kidd is with the Texas Division of Emergency Management.
We have four priorities. They are the continuation of the search. They are debris cleanup and removal. They are supporting individual assistance programs and public assistance programs.
Major General Thomas Seltzer is a senior Texas National Guard officer. He described taking a helicopter trip with Abbott and seeing miles and miles of massive devastation. He talked about assets like 13 helicopters and drones for search and rescue operations. He says the National Guard will not leave until every person is found.
We will continue using assets such as search crews on the ground, high-profile military vehicles, Black Hawk helicopters with rescue hoists, and heavy Chinook helicopters in order to conduct search and rescue, evacuation, and to insert critical safety teams into austere areas to help life-saving.
Also on hand was the Speaker of the Texas House, Dustin Burroughs. He says the legislature will hold a special session on the floods in 2 weeks.
And looking at the debris and looking at the problems and all of the damage that's been done, I know there's a long road to recovery. But through that, we saw some silver linings. We saw Texas flags being flown proudly because we know people of this state are resilient. We saw people from all over the state coming together and working and volunteering and trying to begin helping rebuild and continuing with the search and recovery efforts.
The response to the flood has sparked criticism over how the disaster was handled. Some critics point to the DOGE cuts in the National Weather Service and other federal agencies. Although the Trump administration dismisses blame, it does seem that one of the terminated workers was the person responsible for following up when warnings are sent out. One reporter at the briefing asked about who was to blame. Governor Abbott answered with a sports analogy.
And know this, every football team makes mistakes. The losing teams are the ones that try to point out who's to blame. The championship teams are the ones that say, don't worry about it, man, we got this. We're going to make sure that we go score again, that we're going to win this game. The way winners talk is not to point fingers. They talk about solutions.
He also says he made a commitment to the people in the affected counties.
Texas will not stop until we finish the job. We will not stop until we identify, recover every single body. We'll not stop until every road is rebuilt, every inch of debris is removed. We'll not stop because we are a state that cares about our people, cares about our communities, and we'll be with them every step of the way.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Eklutna tribe has operated its new casino outside Anchorage, Alaska, under the shadow of two separate lawsuits. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, a federal judge has dismissed one.
Ever since a group of property owners tried to block the casino with a lawsuit, tribal advocates have kept a close eye on this case because their attorney, Don Mitchell, challenged the Native Village of Eklutna's status as a federally recognized tribe.
Congress has never allowed a middle-ranking employee of the Interior Department to just wave a magic wand and create 200 Indian tribes, either in Alaska or any other place.
Mitchell is referring to Ada Deer, who was Assistant Interior Secretary in the Bill Clinton administration. In 1993, she included Eklutna in a list of Alaska tribes on the Federal Register to eliminate any doubt that they have the same status as other tribes in the United States. Numerous court cases have tried and failed to invalidate Deer's decision. Last month, U.S. District Judge James Robart stood by those cases and ruled that the Eklutna lawsuit should be dismissed in equity and good conscience. Tribal legal experts like Michelle Demert applauded the ruling but says cases like this one consume time, energy, and precious dollars.
Time and time again, the law is clear in these areas that continue to be challenged. If the argument was that the Eklutna tribe is not a tribe, you know, there's legal precedent, there's federal law that says they are.
In a statement, Aaron Leggett, the president of the Native Village of Eklutna, called the ruling a significant step forward because it affirmed an important principle to the tribe that its rights are firmly rooted in the land. The tribe does face another lawsuit, this one brought on by the Alaska Attorney General. It also aims to shut down the casino. I'm Rhonda McBride.
A recent federal law that passed in the Canadian Parliament has drawn criticism and anger from Indigenous leaders. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
First, there was Bill 5 from Ontario, which allowed the provincial cabinet to designate special economic zones, the aim to fast-track resource development such as mining of critical minerals. That bill passed without consultation from First Nations, and they say it oversteps treaty obligations. Now at the federal level, the controversial Bill C-5 has also passed. It's legislation to fast-track major projects across Canada. It gives Ottawa the power to sidestep environmental protections and other laws. Originally, it was aimed at circumventing the Indian Act, but that part was removed. Some Native leaders have warned that it could lead to protests and legal challenges if it does not respect rights and title. And some had called on members of Parliament and other lawmakers to slow down Bill C-5 so that Indigenous leaders could review the law. Senator Paul Prosper, who is Mi'kmaq, is calling the rushed passage of the legislation a betrayal.
We do not want success and progress to come on the backs of Indigenous peoples. We want to be at the table, making decisions alongside Canadian politicians, because these decisions affect us. They affect our lands and resources.
Prosper said Canada is becoming a country of extremes and the ability for moderate social discourse is gone. The Canadian Chamber of Commerce praised the quick passage of the bill, saying it has the potential to unleash the Canadian economy, but also urged the government to ensure that there is full compliance with rights of Indigenous communities and environmental standards. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Jordan Pangelinan, Daniel Mintz, David Hummel, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. KMUD News is online, and you can find us at kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardos.